What do Selena Gomez, Rihanna, Jennifer Lopez, and even AJ McLean from my beloved Backstreet Boys all have in common? They each have their own beauty line. But it's not just beauty brands, because celebrities are the founders of companies in so many categories, from alcohol to skincare, activewear, lifestyle, and so much more. Even just keeping up with the Kardashians and all their brands can be overwhelming. Today's guest, Dhruv Patel, is helping us keep track. He runs a website called celebritypackagedgoods.com, and his blog features updates about the latest in celebrity brands, from acquisitions to product launches, partnerships, and more. The site also has a helpful directory of every celebrity and their brand affiliations, from investments to endorsements. It's a really cool resource with a ton of information. You have to check it out. And Dhruv is here today to talk to us about it. But first, today's episode is sponsored by the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications Online. For those of you who don't know, I teach in this program. Our online graduate programs offer 8 concentrations and 4 certificates, from social media to public relations, digital strategy, web design, and more. And with a flexible online program designed for busy professionals, you can move at your own pace. Plus, as a top 5 public university, you can be confident in the quality of education you'll receive. Enroll now and take the next step in your career, and maybe I'll see you in class. Welcome to Making the Brand, the podcast where marketing and pop culture collide. I'm your host, Brianne Fleming. I can't wait to chat about brands, boy bands, and everything in between. Because brands who have a pulse on pop culture can create adoring fans of their own. Today's guest created a website I didn't know I needed, but now that it's here, I'm so happy it's in my life. I'm joined by the founder of CelebrityPackageGoods.com, Dhruv Patel. Welcome to the show, Dhruv.
Thank you, Brianne, for having me.
Yeah. So let's get into this. I know you and I both share a passion for pop culture and celebrity news. So what sparked your interest in celebrity brands?
It's an interesting question. I appreciate this question, first of all, because I think the story of Celebrity Packaged Goods actually started way before the first version of the directory was even built. The first startup CPG job that I had out of college was a company called Bite Toothpaste Bits, with, maybe you're familiar with, little compact toothpaste tablets that you pop in your mouth and it foams up like regular toothpaste. And I think about, like, if you think about like the challenge of introducing a product like that, like a very novel, probably even weird product into a market that's been so, you know, has been doing things a certain way for so long. I mean, you have to think about like the types of messaging, content, like it has to be fresh, unique, entertaining. The story has to make sense for, you know, your reason for being. And, you know, everyone's doing sustainability like at this point, right? So what is your separator? And so coming out of that, like reflecting on my experiences working directly with Lindsay McCormick, who is the founder and CEO, I think a lot about like what made her different from the plethora of other operators that I've been able to interact with. There is no doubt in my mind that her, as a former YouTuber, you know, has spent decades in the entertainment industry, informs so much of her ability to tell powerful stories that resulted in purchases and resonated really well with customers. And so, you know, when I had left Bite, I was looking to kind of learn a little bit more from operators like her. And I wanted to look at like, okay, what are all the YouTubers that have started brands? How are those brands doing? And I mean, that resource wasn't really available. And so I built it, right? So about a year ago, my good friend and mentor, Leo, and I spent an afternoon cranking through, you know, any directory of celebrities we could find and just going to Google search, like, you know, who has what brand, how's that brand doing? And we eventually published that to the world. And I don't think either of us expected the response that it got. The community has been absolutely very supportive of us. But fast forward to today, that directory became, you know, just, it's a directory, it's a newsletter. We do interviews with operators behind the businesses that, you know, are celebrity led. And we're basically just building a resource, a playbook for talent management agencies, consumer investors, CPG operators around should you be working with a celebrity? How should you be doing it? What's working right now? What's not? And it's been a heck of a journey, that's for sure.
Yeah, it reminds me. I mean, there's so many other outlets about celebrity news and gossip and what they're wearing, who they're dating, but there wasn't a go-to resource about their businesses and brands that they're building and their endorsements. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm so glad you built it. I love the name, the play on CPG with celebrity packaged goods.
I thought I was very clever in coming up with that. When I talked to more people at, talent management agencies that have been working doing this for like a long time, they're that's an acronym we have like always like made a joke out of forever. Like I was like, oh damn, I thought that was really cool.
Well, I think it's clever. It seems new to me. And when you mentioned Bite, you just reminded me of back in the early 2000s when Jessica Simpson and Ashley Simpson did those Icebreakers liquid ice commercials, and Hilary Duff and Hayley Duff. We love a Y2K throwback around here, so I just had to throw that out there. So, in your experience, how may marketing a celebrity brand differ from other brands and having that type of influence?
Yeah. So the boring but real answer is, Brian, everyone is figuring this out in real time. So look, the concept of celebrity brands is not new, right? Like it's been around forever. I think the recent wave that we've seen of celebrity brands is relatively new. Just the volume of them that we've seen enter the market is something like we've never seen before. But I'll admit, like I'm in a position of privilege where I have the ability to, talk to these operators, CEOs, CMOs of these businesses. And the truth is, like everyone's experimenting, writing a repeatable playbook in real time. Nobody knows their answer. I get a laugh sometimes out of like some of the thought leadership or put in front of us on Twitter or LinkedIn saying like, brand, as long as a celebrity is authentically connected to a brand, it's a $1 billion business. And well, that's not actually how this stuff works. And
Yeah.
I think my favorite one is, if you have a celebrity, you have lower customer acquisition costs. Like I've seen the P&Ls of these businesses. That's not true. And I think
Yeah.
giving celebrities too much credit for kind of the way to the businesses operate. So going back to your original question, how do they actually differ? I'll give you an example. And I think the broad-based bucket or the theme that people should be thinking about celebrity brands through is how do you educate mass audiences around a product in a way that's very unique to the brand story you're trying to craft? There's a company Katy Perry launched called Dissoir. Have you seen this? It's a sparkling non-alcoholic aperitif brand. And so as it relates to non-alcoholic products, I think the market's very small, growing, but small relative to how big I think it's going to be. But you talk to a lot of people who might not have experience with, don't have experience with non-alcoholic products, and they ask a lot of fair questions like, why do I want this? Like, can't I just not drink? Like, what is the feeling? Am I going to get high if I drink this? Like, what is the actual feeling that is associated with this? And it's a really difficult roadblock that the broader category has like yet to figure out a way to overcome. So one of the ways that the operating team at Dissoir has figured out how to talk about their product is they naturally integrate it into Katy Perry's story for why she started it. Katy Perry becomes a new mom, has to cut back or dial back on drinking, but she still wants like to feel like a hyper sense of relaxation, on a Sunday night without regretting it or waking up drunk the next morning. And it turns out that's a problem that a lot of people wanted to solve. And so here it is, problem statement, solution statement. Katy Perry's going through this. You're probably going through this. Here's a solution for that. And that's a really interesting way to talk about, why you should try the product for the first time. I mean, the product's delicious, right? Like you'll get replenishment, like you'll get repeat rates because the product speaks for itself. But how do you drive that first purchase? And so they found a really creative way to bring that into sort of the product story. And I'll tell you this other thing, and this is something I saw recently that they did, and this is all like very unique to celebrity brands and how you like showcase or talk about the product. They did what flavor of Dissoir is what Katy Perry song? So don't hold me to this. Don't hold me to like the actual comparisons they made, but they did like, Dissoir's Golden Hour tastes like listening to fireworks for the first time. And people are like, that's interesting. What I remember the feeling that I had listening to fireworks for the first time. How do you transition that into a taste? So you have like a general idea, but you're intrigued just enough to be interested in the product. Which is a really interesting, like, stop scrolling, like, should I go check this thing out type of deal. And again, just it's very, very unique to the origination or the genesis of the brand and to Katy's story. But that's an example for argument's sake of how celebrity brands have a unique asset at their disposal that most brands don't.
That's a really smart way for her to make her product familiar to a larger audience because people might not know about her brand, but they definitely know fireworks. So to make those connections, I think that's a really a smart way to market. And also, I mean, I didn't realize it was non-alcoholic. I've seen a lot of headlines lately about how Katy Perry is completely sober now, so it generates this wave of press. I'm sure if I were to go through those articles, there's probably some mention of her brand in there. Or there's an opportunity to. So I love that she is one of those celebrities that's kind of weaving their brand into their story. It seems smart and authentic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's another thing too, where it's like, you know, one of the things, and if we dive into that brand a little bit, things that we kind of learned from it is, you know, Scout Bryson, the operator behind that business, had shared some statistics where like north of 80% of their customer base drinks. Like, you know, there's a stigma around non-alc that I think is really interesting in the way this brand is trying to like dispel it, which is you're drinking, consuming non-alc does not mean that you are a sober or you're showcasing a signal to be sober. I think that's one of the other roadblocks that this industry has had, but to be able to showcase that with Katie's wild, energetic personality, say like you can still be fun like Katy Perry, but also consume or like moderate your drinking. That's also a really interesting angle that the brand has at their disposal that, again, I haven't seen too many other brands be able to talk about being fun in that capacity. It's always been about moderation, but to combine moderation and fun in the same token, I think is a very unique positioning that is unique to this brand.
So true. Yeah, it doesn't have to necessarily be cold turkey, but I think a lot of people are trying to maybe cut back, or anytime they have a social outing, you don't have to drink. There are other options. So maybe Tuesday night, you want something non-alcoholic, but Friday night, you know, have at it, have some alcohol. Yeah, I also noticed a trend. I saw a headline the other day that there is a lot of people are starting to do dry weddings, which, yeah. And I brought that up to a friend of mine who's engaged, and they're like, no way, we can't do that. But even just having maybe non-alcoholic options at weddings or bigger events and just making them more prominent on menus and making them more prominent options, I hope we start to see that more.
Yeah, like again, like it goes back to this point. Like if we were tied back to like the original question, which is, I mean, think about the challenging nature of food and beverage. What makes those categories so much harder than the rest of consumer brands? It's like food and beverage is such an intimate experience. You need to try it, you need to taste it. There's a certain mood in which you're, you know, okay, trying certain foods or beverages. To have the power to showcase or talk about an experience and market to that experience before the customer even holds the product in their own hands, that is a powerful thing to recreate. And I think the celebrity brands are really positioned well to be able to talk about those experiences in a way that's only they can. Not to say that other brands cannot do it, but it's to say that it's a very unique thing in their arsenal of different ways that they can market to customers.
Yeah, and especially since celebrity alcohol brands is such a crowded subset of celebrity brands, it's about time someone flipped it on its head a little bit.
No, absolutely. Don't even, that's a whole can of worms.
Yeah, that's a whole other episode. I'm sure we could get into some of those. Yeah, so you mentioned celebrity brands and using a celebrity's influence isn't new. I mean, one of the earliest examples, I'm sure there's something earlier than this, but the most notable example is probably Michael Jordan and Air Jordans. And I'm so excited for that movie to come out this week to see Air. But what are some trends that you've noticed recently? I know that on your website, you are constantly updating people on the latest headlines and celebrity brands and acquisitions and updates. So what are some trends you've started to see based on things that you've been reporting?
Yeah, and I almost turned this question on its head. I posted something on LinkedIn a while back that I noticed you had seen. I've been asking the question of, here's an interesting question. And transparently, I don't know the answer to it. I don't know that anybody knows the answer to it. But is Hollywood somehow more influential or less influential than they were, say, 10, 20 years ago on the things we buy and the way we buy them? You know, some of the proxy variables you can kind of study are like Oscars, you know, this year had the third lowest ratings in the third lowest viewership in history. I mean, there's tons of signals that are sort of on that. And maybe if we like took one like example more particularly, like if you take, for example, like beauty brands, right? Like 5 years ago, I would be willing to bet on any beauty brand that had a celebrity's name attached to it. Now that narrative seems to be turned on its head a little bit where, for example, like every year it seems like there's another variable that gets added to how people make purchasing decisions off of beauty brands that is not related to a celebrity. So the celebrities move down like lower and lower every single year in terms of what the biggest influencer to buy a certain product is. And so, you know, it wasn't like that all the time. And last week I saw an interview that Kate Foster at the outset did with Fast Company, in which she publicly was talking about, which is Scarlett Johansson's skincare brand. And she publicly talked about, yeah, our company's going to, you know, make an active effort to move away from Scarlett Johansson as the face of the company, which is fascinating. Like to publicly come out and say, you know, where the brand started and, you know, showcase very much, this is Scarlett's line, this is her idea. and it's publicly come out and say, yeah, we're going to actually transition away from that. The product should speak for themselves. And you take a step back and you realize that, like, you know, is your product sustainably sourced? Like, are all your ingredients sustainably sourced? Is it vegan? Did you test on animals? You have this like hierarchy of things that are more important in this category for customers to make a purchasing decision that Scarlett might not make the cut in terms of it, as much as she's very involved in the brand, but she might not make the cut in terms of like all the different ways that the brand should be angling itself or talking about itself, which is really fascinating. I think the trend is starting to talk or pick up in beauty that celebrities might not be as important. And the question worth asking is, like, does this trend carry over to, you know, other categories? You know, Jordan starts with, you know, Nike starts with Jordan, and this is Jordan sneaker. But are we at a point where people are so jaded by celebrity culture to the point where maybe celebrities are not the most important part of my decision making? And again, it's a question. I don't know the answer to it, but I think it's worth asking and worth trying to dig into.
Yeah, something to watch. I mean, I think about, just going back to Michael Jordan, I mean, we've seen the name, image, and likeness rules changing. And now any college player now can have influence thanks to things like the creator economy. And even thinking about Scarlett Johansson, I read this morning, actually, that she isn't even on social media. She doesn't have any social media presence. So it kind of makes sense that they pivot and try to message in other ways and not make it just about her. Because also, maybe she's not comfortable being the face of the brand the entire time. I think it takes some of the pressure off as well if you can present it as a brand and a company instead of always as a person. I don't know.
That's such an important point. And I don't think that point gets highlighted enough, right? I think we focus so much, and I say we collectively as like maybe an industry behind, you know, CPG and things like that. I think people have a tendency to focus so much on celebrity as a concept, but forget that there's actually a person behind that. There's a person with, you know, a family. There's a person with, you know, there's a human being with emotions attached to it. The biggest thing I think I've learned around, as I talk to more operators of businesses, you know, a celebrity can be as involved as you can possibly imagine in a business, but there are always limitations to that, right? So if Scarlett's not comfortable, you know, being in the face of it, again, we're speculating here, yeah, being the face of a brand, like that is her decision. The brand still needs to operate. They have investors they report to, I'm assuming. And that's a very real thing, right? Like that is a person attached to a business and they should be treated as a person, right? Not just one and the same.
Yeah. And we've seen that it can still be successful without that celebrity influence. It's interesting to see that pivot.
Yeah, I think all of the major celebrity brands go through that transition. And I think they need to at some point, right? There's only so much of an audience that you can captivate or reach with just using the celebrity's name. At a certain point, you start segmenting yourself into buckets that might be artificial. If all, you know, for example, the Honest Company did was talk about Jessica Alba's story.
I was just going to say the Honest Company. That's what comes to mind. It's like the brand has eclipsed her in a way. Like it's so big now. She's done such a good job with her messaging that it's just the brand speaks for itself, like you said.
Yeah, you get your wings and you flourish away from your celebrity. I think celebrities are a great way to, you know, kickstart the fire, if you will. Should a brand stay with it forever? I don't know. I think the answer is probably no, if I were to guess. But I think the Honest Company is a great example of this, you know, in spite of recent times. Skims might even be an example worth throwing in there as well. But yeah, 100%. I don't think that gets enough attention. Where, you know, a celebrity brand is not a celebrity brand forever. At some point, or just a company, you know, yeah, talking to a broader audience.
So true. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch and see if there are any other brands that kind of follow suit and kind of wean the celebrity off their forward-facing messaging a bit. So I'd love to know, from what you've seen, are there any specific industries that you think celebrities have more of an advantage of when it comes to their brands and how they market them? Are there any categories where having that celebrity name is just really going to make a big difference versus not having it?
Yeah, damn, that's a pretty good question. The answer is, I don't know that I have data on that. And I'll be very transparent about the things that I know for sure and the things that I don't. However, I will say this, for as far as our data is showing, there are very specific characteristics of industries that talent-led brands have recently done well in. Think about your like boring legacy, you know, industries that have been around for centuries or decades. I'll give you an example to sort of highlight the point. Let's talk about Skims, right? Like shapewear has been around since 2000, right? Like Spanx was this dominant player that the market wasn't big enough to the point where you wanted to compete with them, but at the same time, like we didn't really understand how big shapewear could actually get. And yeah, so, you know, marketed to a very specific customer demographic, people didn't, outside of that demographic, didn't really understand. And demographic meaning, you know, people of all different body sizes, you know, different skin tones. Outside of the main customer group, people didn't really understand the point of shapewear. So Here comes along Skims, right? And you have to keep in mind, like 2019, Skims was not an obvious idea. As much as it seems like right now, they try to enter in a market where it was predominantly monopolized by banks. And so, what they've done right, and if you pay attention to any of, like, next time you see a Skims commercial, pay attention to like the setup or the photography or the creative work. It's always people of all different shapes and sizes, different skin tones, lined up all behind Kim Kardashian. And Kim Kardashian's dead center in the middle of it, juxtaposing everything. The idea being, you don't have to look like Kim Kardashian for this product to work for you. You can look like anybody that's a part of this group or associated with, in this particular creative asset. And so that's a very, very powerful narrative to create in an industry that has been positioned to such a specific demographic for so long. Now, of course, the product works really well. People are really happy with it. And those are all things like at the very ground level. But on top of that, how do you build a story that turns, audience reach into audience interest? And it's to be able to position the narrative around things like that. It's how do we basically tell the story of diversity and inclusion, and that Shaper should be a bigger market. And obviously, Kim Kardashian, having told the story of wearing Shaper forever on the red carpet, worked really well to amplify that narrative. Those are types of industries. I think some other examples that come to mind is, this behemoth of Gatorade and Powerade dominating the hydration beverage market for so long. Somebody asked the question, probably this, I'm making this up, but somebody probably asked the question of, what would it look like to give two of the most chaotic, probably the wrong word, but energetic YouTubers unparalleled access to distribution and just let them, just hit the button that says go? And that's what we're seeing play out in real time with Prime, right? All the videos you see of people stomping on each other to get a bottle of Prime hydration, they feed all that energy online. If you look at like Twitter and Instagram, they're reposting all that stuff. The chaotic behavior of consumers around Prime, that's behavior that gets rewarded by those creators. And so, Gatorade, like, and here's the other thing. Did you see the Prime Hydration Super Bowl commercial?
It's not ringing a bell. I'm sure I did, but it doesn't come to mind right now.
So think about your typical Gatorade Powerade commercials that you look at. These like athlete that's like sweaty, like midway through their workout, 18th rep on the 20th set, like this really like alpha dominant character. It's like the brand takes itself very, very seriously for Gatorade and Powerade. And then you juxtapose that with like Prime Super Bowl commercial, which was like fun, captivating, energetic. It was this brand new perspective on a market that's been pretty much marketed the same way forever. And so basically, without rambling here, the point that I'm making is celebrities typically do really well in categories where they have a very timely, contrarian perspective on the way a product should exist in a market. Skims did it, Prime is doing it. I'd probably even throw Mr. Beast's Feastables in there, and how they've gamified their, to their current audience or their customer base. The list goes on, but those are typically the industries that are really well suited for celebrity brands.
I think what I'm hearing, or what comes to mind for me as you share that, is like the celebrities are kind of coming down from their pedestals that we may put them on, thinking about like, oh, I can never look like Kim Kardashian. If I buy this product, that doesn't mean I'm going to look like her. Or, Gatorade, I can't lift like that, or I'm not that athletic. They're coming down from these pedestals and trying to be more relatable and inclusive, like you said, because I think that's one of our biggest hesitations with buying from these celebrity brands is okay, I don't have a beauty team. I'm not gonna look like that, or I can't be that. So the more that they can kind of come and be on a more relatable level, I think is an advantage for them.
Yeah, 100%. If you ever think about like the way like beauty brands or even like take for example like Chamberlain Coffee, right? I think they do a great job with this. The point that you just made, right? It's not enough that you should recreate the recipes that Emma Chamberlain is posting about. It's that you should use the products and the ingredients that she's using to recreate them, right? And so it's this idea of like attainable aspiration, if you will. I think that's one way to put it, which is, we can go achieve this. It's actually just arm's length away. Being able to attain that might make me one degree closer to the celebrities I look up to, but it's a really interesting product positioning strategy. And I think the playbook on this is actually being written in real time as well. I don't think anybody has it completely figured out. If they do, they're definitely not sharing it. But no, it's really interesting to sort of think about or dissect.
Well, thank you for covering all of those strengths and advantages that celebrities may have. But now I'd love to get into what may be some of the disadvantages. I mean, we have a lot of people who are sometimes skeptical. We've got another celebrity coming out with another brand, and we always question, like, okay, are they just slapping their name on this? Is it sustainable, or is this formula something that actually works? We have lots of questions and skepticism. So what may be some things that celebrities face when marketing these brands that are a disadvantage to them that we may not see from the outside looking in?
Yeah, and I love this question so much because I hold the perspective as somebody who's like 24/7, like digging into the weeds of celebrity brands and probably putting them on a pedestal more than I probably should. But there are probably more disadvantages with having a celebrity's face on your brand than advantages. And I think there's probably like three large buckets that I've been able to put them under. And we can sort of dive into them one at a time. So one is like reputation risk, right? So and the easiest way to ask this question is, and I'll give you an example that I think you'll get a kick out of, but the easiest way to ask this question is, what if my celebrity gets canceled? Is the brand dead? Right? I won't share the name of the brand or the celebrity, but a friend of mine who operates a celebrity brand had this massive photo shoot had a massive photo shoot taking place for a massive new distribution opportunity. They're launching a brand new product. It's gonna take up like all the internet, right? It's gonna be a big deal for this company. So they spent tens of thousands of dollars put together this photo shoot, right? So
Boy.
in the middle of the photo shoot, halfway through, one of the celebrity's agent gets a text message saying, "Hey, there's something that we should take care of like immediately." Somebody had basically posted something online about the celebrity. It caught fire, like, it caught wildfire, basically. And the photo shoot just stopped. I mean, can you imagine, Brianne, if you were the CMO, like sitting at that photo shoot, like what is going through your mind? We just spent, because the CEO is looking at you too, right? Like, hey, this was your idea. We just spent tens of thousands of dollars on this photo shoot. Like, what's happening, right? And
Yeah.
the brand was able to navigate through it, but like that is terrifying, right? That is absolutely terrifying. But that's forces outside of your own control. That's what you're signing up for. So if you want the ability to use your celebrity partner as content, it comes with ups and downs, a double-edged sword. So I'd say number one is reputation risk. Number two is engagement risk. I tell people that, people come to me all the time like, hey, what celebrity should I be working with? The one thing I always caution people is it's actually not as glamorous as it seems. The most engaged a celebrity will probably ever be is the moment that the ink dries on the contract. And it's not that they're bad people or anything like that. It's just they have so much going on in their lives, right? Like Katy Perry might have a residency in Las Vegas and then go fly to Australia to go do a show and then come back and be, a guest judge on American Idol. And it's just like, how do you chase them down for content at the appropriate time? And how do you integrate that into their regular schedules, right? And I think that might even, so that's point number three as well, which is like, how do I think about when I can loop in my celebrity? Okay, so they're engaged, I fought this uphill battle and they're engaged, but how do I figure out the right time to bring them in to record content? And like, how often does content make sense? Typically, you want to do as much content as you can up front. One of the things that, and going back to like Dissois, for example, that they've done so, I think so interestingly is, if they know Katie is going to be glammed up for, her guest appearance on American Idol or whatever it is, they see that as an opportunity for her to get professional makeup done. Hey, can we get a couple shots with Dissois while you're, while you're
Smart.
getting done professionally? So there are ways to mitigate it. I still think that there's a lot of risk associated with it, but it's not always a guaranteed thing. But you can find ways to naturally integrate into their content. But I'd say those are like the three big disadvantages, which is always in the public eye. Just, this second idea of like, engagement or like how engaged you are. Like, Brian, if we start like a bubblegum company, right? It's like Brian's Bubblegum. I don't get any content out of you. It's like we start a bubblegum company. Like, the probably engagement risk and then timing, getting content scheduled into their content calendar is, I think, really, really challenging. And that's a unique challenge to these businesses, right?
Yeah, and then they'll really have to pivot because you probably take these roles thinking this is going to be great. Like Katie already has an audience. This is going to be what we leverage. And then all of a sudden you are just chasing her down the whole time and your channels go dead and you have to come up with something else. So I can imagine how frustrating that would be for internal teams to try to figure out and
Yeah, no,
navigate.
100%. And I think there's also a delineation point. Do the celebrities start the brand or do they just join kind of, as a co-founder with the title? And I mean, they throw on titles like creative director or chief mission officer. And I really think it does make a difference from as far as I can tell, talking to these operators, like Katie is very, very involved in the brand. I mean, more than people recognize. Like, is my celebrity fired up about what we're doing? Or is it just one of many opportunities they're taking on? And it's a question that's probably more of a fear for a lot of these businesses than anything else. But, you kind of can make out who's actually like really engaged in the business and who's being forced out of the contract.
And I mean, in a lot of ways, it's in the celebrity's best interest. I mean, I know they can't be everywhere and see everything, but their name is on these products. You have all these people working for you. That can be a little bit of a control push and pull, not knowing what people are doing on behalf of your brand and not having that full visibility. You really have to rely on that trust. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I would also say, like, if you like go through the directory, I saw that you had taken a screenshot of like the Rihanna one. Rihanna has a brand that she two brands that she launched, right? Fenty Beauty and Savage. She also does endorsements like every year, right? So it's one of many different opportunities that she's taking on as an entrepreneur. I think a lot of people look at that with some level of fear, but I think that might be the wrong way to look at it. What's happening, and if you notice, I mean, Rihanna hasn't put out music. I think we're finally getting an album this year, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But like, Rihanna has really embraced being an entrepreneur, right? She has the spirit in her that is very much in the like of, you know, the Jay-Z's of the world, the P. Diddy's of the world. And it's something I think to be more optimistic about when a celebrity is involved in multiple things, which might not seem so obvious, but it does mean that they're taking themselves as a founder, as a business person, very seriously. Because at the end of the day, like, the best way to probably classify celebrities are they are a standalone business, right? They're a media business. And I don't think they get a lot of, I don't think they get the nearly as much respect as they should for being that. But I'm probably more encouraged when a celebrity is involved in multiple things. Obviously, it depends how much they're involved. I don't know if I would ever bet on a brand they started that they're there for like 15 hours a year, right? Like,
yeah.
But I think there's a nice balance to it. But signaling a commitment to entrepreneurship is, I think, a positive thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on that because I think that is a misconception, or like you said, something we don't give them enough credit for. Is we assume it's easy. We assume that they have everyone doing everything for them, that they don't get their hands dirty. And I imagine that Rihanna is someone who gets in the weeds and takes her brand very seriously and knows what she's doing.
Oh, 100%. Like Courtney Cox, when Home Court was launching, Courtney Cox was like packing and like handwriting notes to her first like 100 customers. People don't know this. Like, it's when some of the operators have a fear that when you over index on a celebrity, you kind of lean into them accidentally. And like, that's not a bad thing per se, but there's a very, you want to be able to control how much you lean into them. But like, people didn't know that about Courtney Cox. Like, she was doing a lot of ground level just behind the scenes because like her brand got her excited, and she's still super excited about it to this day. And I've seen encapsulate some. I love the play on Monica Geller, but it tells you the story that like, if you can get a celebrity to be really fired up about something, they're regular people. Like, they understand the business opportunity. They understand what it would do to their audience, you know, to be able to captivate them into customers. Like, they're not, like, I think people, we assume that celebrities are just stupid. Like, they're not. They're probably some of the most brilliant business people that you'll ever run into. And they're not afraid to do the work. Obviously, not every one of them is the same. I'm making generalizations, but you will find celebrities that will go to bat for you if you start a business with them. And that is a very, very special thing.
Yeah. And I mean, thinking about Courtney Cox, I mean, she's still acting. She's still out there doing her thing. But I imagine that for a lot of celebrities, they think about, okay, I want a little bit of a shift in lifestyle. Maybe I want to take a step back from acting. What else can I focus on and use my time that I'm still going to be passionate about? It's interesting to see different celebrities with like different phases of their lives and trying different things. Or, you know, I think about when Kristen Bell became a mother, like then she started her company. So they go through these phases of life and try new things as entrepreneurs and as business people. It's great to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So as we've touched on, I mean, celebrities have a ton of influence. They have a ton of followers. So who do you think is using social media well and making the most out of their following that they have to promote their brands?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, but because like, I would almost say that, so here's, let me give you an example of something that I think drives me crazy. I'll pull up Instagram and I'll go through any number of celebrities and it'll be a picture of their family, them on vacation, them at the Oscars, and then like some red carpet event. Here's, by the way, I also sell product, and then it's another picture of the Oscar. It just feels so like, it doesn't feel very serendipitous. The brands that have gotten this really right, I'll give you a specific example of a brand that I think has done activations, in real life activations, and converted that into phenomenal content on social. Gal Gadot's Goodles, if you've been following this brand closely, they have the playbook down for this. They'll basically do this, they'll come up with like trucks, or you know, they'll basically serve hot mac and cheese to you. Goodles is a better for you mac and cheese brand. And they'll like get their customers or their Gal Gadot's audience to come out and try the mac and cheese. And every now and then, Gal would also be there. And she'll take pictures with their fans and kind of create this really powerful brand moment. And then the same evening, she'll go back online and repost every single one of those pictures. She'll post, you know, her being there at the event. What it does for the brand is like it creates this like connection point between, hey, we're Goodles, Gal Gadot's the celebrity behind us. And it connects those two together into what is a really powerful brand experience. If you were there, you'll remember that for the rest of your life. If you weren't there, you can almost experience it through the people that were there, that got a chance to meet Gal. It almost feels like you were kind of there with them. That is like a very, very powerful moment that a brand can create. It almost reminds you of like the good old Instagram days where, you know, but before everyone was just posting reels and you're scrolling through, you know, every 6 seconds into a new reel. It kind of reminds you of like when friends used to share intimate moments with each other. your best friend just got engaged, it almost feels like you can experience it through the photo, your whatever, any number of posts. But that type of very intimate experience created between brands, celebrities, and their fans, I think is a really powerful way that celebrities are leveraging social media to promote it. But I have the biggest pet peeve, which is, by the way, we sell products, like just mixed into the plethora of other reasons I follow a celebrity. But yeah, that's a whole different episode I could go into.
Yeah, no, you're right. I feel like I do see that. It's just like their grid, and they just, it's like they're so disjointed. It's like one day I'm in my home life, and then today is like, okay, today I'll post about the business, and then I'll just go on and then forget about it tomorrow. I love when they let us be like a fly on the wall, and they bring us to their business meetings, or we see glimpses behind the scenes and things like that. And that's one thing I saw Kim Kardashian tweeted a couple months ago. She's like, "What do you guys want to see more of on our new Hulu show?" And a lot of people said, "We want to see less of the business." And I was like, "No, that's the interesting part." You know, when she goes behind the scenes and she shows Skims, like something she's so proud of, and you know, it's hard to keep up with the Kardashians and all their brands, but I love when they just sh this is their life every day. You know, she does her photo shoots, but this is also part of her life. So
That family is, I could write a book about that family. Just
yeah.
from the year, just from the year of operating celebrity package goods. That family is probably one of the best dynasties that we've ever seen when it comes to all things commerce, CPG. I mean, they have like four built brands worth over $1 billion. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, they're just launching them like it's nothing. 818 Tequila sells 136 cases 7 months after launch, right? Like Safely, which is a Kris Jenner brand launch in 2021, is already in Walmart across country. I mean, like they have it down. I
Yeah.
mean,
I want to see Kris Jenner become one of the sharks on Shark Tank one of these days.
they could probably start their own Shark Tank, and there's
True.
nothing NBC clear about that. That would be really fascinating because what I forget her name, Emma Greed, who's one of the sharks. I think it might be Emma Greed, but she has a big role in that, in the family's businesses. Double check me on the name, by the way. I'm definitely messing that up, but she founded Skims with the family. She founded Good American with the family. She founded Safely with the family. She's a shark on Shark Tank. I just loop her into, all right, we're gonna launch our own, right? So we
Yeah,
investing with the
it wouldn't
Kardashians.
surprise me. It would not surprise me at all. So we kind of touched on this, how celebrities can make sure that their brands feel authentic and like it truly is part of their lives and like they are involved. Are there any other maybe examples or anything that you would suggest that celebrities should be doing or what they're already doing well to come off as genuine to their audience that they're trying to sell to?
You know what I love about the way you ask that question is you ask, how does something feel authentic, come off as genuine, like as genuine? What you didn't ask me is like, what are like actually authentic things? Authenticity is, and this drives me absolutely crazy when I see it online, where it's like authenticity is the most important thing to a celebrity brand. Authenticity is probably the least important thing. Authenticity is a measure of intent. Nobody actually knows if a celebrity is authentically, passionate about better for you sodas or sparkling, aperitifs or whatever. What we're trying to study, or what we're trying to focus on, is story continuity. So you can almost boil it down into a formula, which is consistency over a period of time. How long have you had a track record talking about or being an authority figure on a certain topic? Kim Kardashian and Skims, been talking about shapewear forever, right? Like she's talking about diversity and inclusion and bringing that into the forefront forever. Hailey Bieber and Rose Skincare. Hailey Bieber has been a skinfluencer, right, forever. She's been a central place where people go to find regimens about, their skincare routines or how they should be thinking about certain ingredients forever. Her track record is probably the longest, lasting, has been the longest track record on all things skincare from anything that we've seen. And so when it comes to that, it's like she's endorsed tons of products related to skincare. But it's not enough that you should go follow her skincare routines. It's that you should go use the exact products that she's recommending. When that moment gets created where people are actually asking not just for routines, but for the specific products that you're using, why are you using those products? That's typically an opportunity to go build a brand that continues the story and the narrative that you've been telling. That's what we're looking for. It's not, you can go crazy trying to figure out if you're looking, if I'm an investor and I'm trying to evaluate if I should invest in a celebrity brand or not, I can absolutely go crazy trying to figure out if it's authentic or not. It's unimportant. All that matters is that it's perceived as authentic in the market. Which I know sucks to kind of hear, but that is the truth of kind of what makes these businesses tick. Now, it could very much be true that Hailey Bieber is like the biggest snob for, all things skincare, and she is doing her research, which could very much be true. It's just that I don't think people actually know that. I think people in her inner circle might, and Hailey Bieber definitely does, But anything outside of that, there's just no way to tell, right? So
Yeah.
I would say those are some of the obvious ones.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think it's also, we need to give celebrities and people in general just like permission for their interests and things to change. Like, I think about Kendall Jenner. I don't know if it was on their show or whatnot, but she was feeling like she had to defend why she started 818 because I don't think tequila was like something we associated her with. There wasn't that story continuity to your point before she launched it. To me, at first, it seemed kind of random, but it seemed like she did her research. She went out to the farms and like really got her, like I said, got her hands dirty with it and became passionate about it. So I think there's something to be said for that as well, as it may not been have perceived authentically originally, but things changed.
Yeah, and that's where you typically get the backlash, right? Was when there is no story continuity. But I will say this about 818. The thing that always clicked to me about 818 is Kendall has been known as, somebody that attends really, high up, high-end parties and like does enjoy a richer cocktail or whatever it is. The alcohol line did actually, for me, make sense for Kendall as somebody who does have a more fun, bouncy personality, and does attend a lot of like parties and events. That seemed to click for me really well. They did something, I can't remember where, but they have a lounge somewhere on an island where it's an island that you go to, like if you're wealthy or like well off, but they literally have an 818 lounge, right? And you can literally Google this, and it's an opportunity for you to experience a brand, have recipes that are designed by Kendall, and it's a place that you go like to throw events if you're really well off. And that's, again, the going back to this idea of like attainable aspiration, is that attainable? I don't know, but is it inspiring? Absolutely. And so like that to me did click. Tequila itself as a format, I'm not really sure about, but yeah, that's a really interesting angle to story continuity.
I love that. I forgot. I mean, yeah, she does kind of live this glamorous life, and I'm sure while she's out, that's a great opportunity to cross promote. I guess I kind of think of her as more of the model Kendall, and I would have pictured her maybe being more involved on the beauty side, but I guess her sister Kylie has that covered. So they really cover the whole gamut, that family.
No, absolutely.
So I know you've shared so many great examples already, but are there any other celebrity brands that in your mind stand out? They're just knocking it out of the park, or any celebrity brands to watch?
To watch, yeah, absolutely. I'll give you two examples, and I don't think I've used this example yet. So, are you familiar with Oza and Joe Jonas? They basically did a ready-to-drink cocktail in a can format. One of the things that I'm hearing about this brand is how involved Joe is in the business. Nobody's telling him to show up to like, retail locations by himself and take content, record content, or on the weekend to record content and submit it to the team, or come with XYZ idea ready for our meeting on Wednesday. He's doing this stuff organically by himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he is so passionate about the business. I mean, that stuff, like, no one, it wasn't even put in the contract that he should be coming up with all these ideas. And so when you see typically this delineation between what was actually a celebrity told to do and how much they're doing, when the separation gap between what they're doing and what they're told to do is high, that typically is a really interesting brand worth paying attention to. Either something about the performance of the business, the research and the innovation about to come down the pipeline, whatever it is, or it makes them feel like they have some element of their brand that they were not able to access before, their personal brand. That's a really powerful connection that celebrities and their brands typically make. You very, 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 very rarely see it. Typically, everything you see is written in some sort of contract. But when you hear rumors like that kind of come out, those are brands worth paying attention to. I'll share another example that I think is different. It's same, but different for different reasons. If you think about Feastables and Mr. Beast, people think about Mr. Beast as this like phenomenal acquisition channel. All he's going to do is post about it, and we're going to drive, billions of dollars of sales. Well, that's not actually what happens, right? One of my good friends who runs their customer experience program, Jess, she has nailed down the customer experience of that brand in a way that I think people need to look up to as like a playbook for how good customer experience needs to be. They had this moment early in days of the brand where people would come into the Feastables website and they would talk to the chatbot, just the chatbot in the bottom right corner, as if it was Mr. Beast. They would say, "Tell me a joke. Can I be a part of the next video?" And Jess is like, "No, you can't have any of these things." But then she's like, "Wait a minute, hang on a second. This is an opportunity for us." So what she's done is basically rebuild a chatbot to be Mr. Beast. So now, if somebody comes in and says, "Can you tell me a joke?" they will literally go through a flow that's literally just them being entertained for hours of just different jokes that they're hearing from Mr. Beast. That is a very, very powerful moment or gamification experience that is so unique to Mr. Beast And the way that team has been able to shape around all the ideas that is the Feastables brand around the brand that is Mr. Beast, while they're same in a lot of regards, they are just different enough where you can love Mr. Beast and be obsessed with Feastables because it's Feastables and not necessarily Mr. Beast. That's a very powerful moment. And I think the operators behind that team don't get enough credit for being able to drive, you know, repeat purchases and build a brand that they have. But beyond just Mr. Beast, obviously being, you know, an entire icon in his own, it's really fascinating how they've been able to convert Mr. Beast fans into Feastables customers. And those two ideas are very separate. And yeah, I think those are two really interesting case studies being written out in real time.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for that overview. You are certainly knowledgeable about all of this stuff. What I think is also notable about Mr. Beast and this whole subject of celebrity packaged goods is that there comes a point where influencers become celebrities. Like what is that line? You know, we're seeing it with Mr. Beast. He obviously has massive influence, but he wasn't your traditional celebrity. He's a YouTube celebrity. So now they're kind of one and the same in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And Brian, I think there's a topic worth digging into. At some point, someone's going to write about this, but the idea of like, why are you influential? And I think people are influential for different reasons. Are you influential because I just have a lot of access to you? Meaning like I see Kim Kardashian everywhere, right? Like I see Drake and Kanye everywhere, right? Everywhere on my social media. Or are you influential because you are known for something? You are pretty good at your craft, right? Like Mr. Beast is probably one of the best content creators that we have ever seen and probably will see for a long time. And he's known to be influential for that thing, right? Like he has a following because he is good at that one thing. Not saying Kanye and Drake are not, but I'm saying, are there reasons, are there lines that separate why people are influential for different reasons? Are you influential because you have a very particular contrarian take on, you know, women's fashion or whatever it is? And I think that that topic is worth diving into and how that sort of informs or shapes the way we get influenced by these people. And these people, meaning celebrities, creators, you know, digital influencers, AI influencers, which is a whole new topic. But there's, I think, so much worth digging into that. I think for so long, we've been taking celebrity culture and just sort of running with it. I haven't actually spent time digging into why are we so fascinated by it? Is it just because it's accessible or like, what is it, right?
Yeah. There was a documentary, I want to say a year or two ago, called Celebrity. And they wrote sell with like a dollar sign. And it really went into, it was Kim Kardashian, Paris Hilton, and Britney Spears. And it was just talking about kind of that early era of the early 2000s when influence was changing. You know, they say Britney and Paris invented the selfie. And that was a whole moment. And then Kim Kardashian, you know, joins in, and obviously we know everything that went on with her and how she's just made a whole business out of not being a traditional celebrity. So highly recommend that documentary if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. You know, listen, like I think what's so interesting about the work that we do is we get a chance to hear directly from the operators behind these businesses. I've been in consumer for my entire life. I like to tell people first by accident, then by choice, then now by accident again. And it's funny, like I think there's so much playing out in real time that it's hard to make sense of. But I do think we are at a pivotal moment in sort of the question of why do we buy things and, you know, what we buy and how we buy it. And I do think a lot of things are changing. And to be able to check all that is such a privileged position. So I'm fair game for any resource, any documentary you've seen that is would help inform understanding, because nobody has it figured out. And don't let anybody fool you otherwise, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody has really put together such a great resource and, you know, newsletter and everything on this subject until you've come along. I really enjoy your website and also just how current it is, as well as your Twitter feed that I hear about things through that Twitter feed before I see them anywhere else. I don't know how you do it. You know all the tea and all the moves that these celebrities are making. So I'd love if we could just end with what is the latest that's happening this week? Any new brands emerging that we should know about? And yeah.
New brands. I saw Feastables did gummies. I got to confirm if that thing is actually real. It's just somebody tweeted about it and then somebody else did. So it might be real, but that's interesting. But probably the biggest news story this week is Sarah Hyland's brand. Well, it's Sarah Hyland's co-founder of the brand. Jen Moore and Andrew Remingler started a company called Source, which is basically edible chocolate vitamins that basically for people who have, you know, been taking pills their entire life, you know, just part of broader health issues. They have something called pill fatigue, which is, it's like another pill. So they basically reinvented the format of taking vitamins in a chocolate, like a delicious chocolate format. Ah. You'll basically eat them like M&Ms, but don't eat them like M&Ms. And, you know, they each do a different thing, which is, you know, help your skin glow or whatever it is, any number of things. And we just got an announcement about an hour ago. As of this recording, Jen had shot me a note They just got into Sephora, which is a big deal, right? I mean, we talk beauty brands kind of having had their moment. Maybe celebrities are less interesting, and here's this giant beauty retailer that is like, nope, you're probably wrong about that. We're betting on celebrities. But what's so unique is I think this product might be one of the most innovative products I've seen in recent years. And Sephora taking a bet on innovation backed by celebrity is so fascinating. And I think the two operators behind the business do such a phenomenal job of scaling their team, staying true to, being continuously innovating new products, new flavors. The way they encapsulate Sarah and her story, which is something definitely worth researching into, is just how intimately she believes in what they're trying to build. Just as somebody who's been, taking pills forever. And to be able to captivate that story and bring it to sort of a mass market like Sephora, this is a huge deal. And I cannot wait to write about it this week.
Oh God, I can't wait to check that out. And it seems like it's authentic to Sarah. I forgot. I know she's had some health struggles in the past, so I know pill fatigue, that's probably something she knows well.
Intimately, yeah.
Yeah. So
Andrew has shared a story when I interviewed him that did end up making it. So I know I can share this. She was on a set of Modern Family, and in the middle of the set, she had to have family members donate an organ to her. Just it was like obviously a very emotional thing for her, really big deal to have a family basically take a piece of a family member just for your own health. They don't I think one of the things they do right is you can definitely juice or milk the hell out of a story to the point where people get jaded by it. The operating team behind that just understands how personal that story is, and they know when it's appropriate to talk about that, when it's not. And obviously, it's a very organic thing as well. Like it is something that was real. It's something worth talking about. But I'm a big fan of that team, and I think that they have a lot going for them.
yeah, I am excited to see it. Thank you for all the updates. Thank you for keeping me informed and also for sharing all of your knowledge and insights today. This was super interesting, and I look forward to continuing to follow the blog and all of your tweets and your newsletter. Everyone, go check out celebritypackagedgoods.com.
This is a really fun interview. I appreciate you having me on, man.
Anytime, anytime. Thanks, Drew.
If you're a fan of this podcast, be sure to subscribe, or better yet, leave a review. For marketing wisdom with a pop culture twist sent straight to your inbox, sign up for my newsletter at briannefleming.com/newsletter or find me on Twitter at Brianne2K. As always, thanks for listening.